Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros live on bbsradio.com. And we are back tonight live with original programming, and we are back actually with part two. We had done an interview with Candida Royale last in August, and my intention then was to do a retrospective of her career, both in front of the camera and behind the camera as director. And we spent so much time on the in the first part that we had to have Candida back for part two, and I'd like to welcome back to the show right now Candida Royale. Thank you so much for being my guest tonight.
My pleasure, Stephen. Glad to be back. We had so much fun talking last time.
Yes. Yes. And we it was starting basically with, just for a brief recap, how you began your career in front of the camera as a performer in that time, which was known as the golden age of adult films.
Right.
Around from 74 to about 81, although I think your last, the last time you went in front of the camera was in 83.
Well, the last time I went before the camera and really performed in an erotic scene was 1980, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I continued to do little acting parts, and then with my own movies, I would do these little fun walk-ons and acting bits. But, yeah, I the last time was 1980.
Okay, that's great. Was that, we have that cleared up. and basically also, you know, we talked about, you know, some of the personalities who you knew and who you worked with at that time, such as John Holmes and Laurie Ann Dominique and Leslie Beauvais. So we're going to flash forward to, I guess, would be 1981, 1983. I believe at that time you were doing criticisms. You were writing reviews of films.
Yes. Yes, I actually was, I started reviewing the movies, and I started doing behind-the-scenes pieces where I would go on the film sets and just kind of write about what was going on and interview the different people. And like, I went on quite a few Chuck Vincent sets, and I would talk to Samantha Fox and Jerry Butler when he was very first starting out, and all the, you know, Veronica Hart, Kelly Nichols, and report back, and I did little gossip columns and for like High Society and Chic, and I did a really fun piece for High Times magazine about my career in the movies when Larry Sloman, also known as Ratso, was the editor over there. So I did quite a bit of writing, actually, some lengthy pieces. I did a longish piece about whether it was difficult or not for women who were in movies to have lasting relationships. Mm. So I was doing a lot of writing and had to make the decision between whether I wanted to turn that into more of a real professional career and go more mainstream or do something else, which of course led into my decision to get behind the camera instead, because it was a kind of, I sort of didn't really like the prospect of sitting behind, at that time, a typewriter so much of the time, or a keyboard, we could say.
Yes.
Yeah, so, cause, you know, the life of a writer can be very solitary, and more of as an observer than a participant.
Oh, yes, that's quite true. What was the impetus to create Femme?
Well, I had been really trying to... I was going through a process of making sense of my life up until that point. You know, I talked a little bit about, I guess, even before my going into movies, I think in our first interview, you know, that I was involved in a lot of avant-garde underground theater in San Francisco.
Yes.
I sang in jazz clubs for a while, and then I was also in movies to support my art habit, I like to say, because I was making art and selling my art. And, you know, I decided to, I really wanted to look back and reflect on, after I got out of movies, I wanted to reflect on on why I would make such a controversial choice and whether and make sure that I was okay with it and comfortable with it and wasn't going to. So many actresses really run away from their careers and try to hide once they stop being in movies, and they live in this dread fear of, at least in those days when, you know, being in movies didn't mean that everyone in the world knew who you were, because usually the movies were played in dark CD theaters and no one ever saw them beyond that. And so a lot of the actresses would live in fear of being discovered, and I didn't want that to happen. And so in the process of really reflecting on my life, and I started to, you know, really think about the genre and was it a bad thing, or, you know, was there some value to it? And so I did a lot of soul-searching as well as kind of looking back historically, and I really did conclude that there was nothing wrong with adult movies, that they could be actually very entertaining and they could be sexy and they could help people get in touch with their sexuality, their sexual needs. But I did come to feel that I had always felt, even when I was in the movies, that they didn't reflect female sexuality. They really, and they lacked so much in terms of any alternative view besides what was pretty standard formulaic pornography for most of them. You had your handful of very creative directors like Radley Metzger and Henri Pichard or Ron Sullivan and different people, Chuck Vincent, but most of it was so standard formula, and I thought it could be done so much better, and it really could be done from a woman's voice. And, you know, sometimes opportunity just sort of falls into your lap, and if you're paying attention, it can kind of open your mind to doing something that you hadn't anticipated before. But I guess really it was when I was looking to lock into something, a new direction for myself. I always wanted a serious career, and I always wanted to be able to take care of myself. And this woman came into my life named Lauren Neamey, I had already been talking, saying, gee, I wonder what it would be like to make a movie from a woman's point of view. What would I do different? What would I change? And I knew that the sexual depiction was the thing that really had to change. I hated the formula. And she came from the Midwest and was looking, she had this idea to do erotic rock videos, sort of MTV style. And she, in the process of searching out people to do this with and to finance it, an old friend of mine heard her talking to her boss and said, you should meet Candida Royale. You have to meet this woman. So she did. She called me up. We got together. We got to talking. We really hit it off. I liked her idea of the way to do it. It sounded like a really good idea to me. At the time, I was married to a young Swedish producer and whose family were very successful film producers in Sweden and also distributors, and they heard Lauren and I talking about this. And my father-in-law always thought that I would be a good director. He just somehow picked up on this. And so he offered that if I could find distribution for it, he would finance it. And so it was just like that, you know, like it was just meant to be. I was in the right place at the right time, the right ideas coming together, and I thought, wow, I guess I am meant to do this. And it really fulfilled a few different needs in me. One was to sort of reclaim my name, Candida Royale, and do something that I could really be proud of with it, because at that time, cable TV and video were born, and my name was being pulled out, but just as an actress in other people's movies. The other thing was that I was looking for my own serious career, and finally, I wanted to prove that you could do erotic movies that reflected female sensibilities that men and women could enjoy together and that were intelligent, well done, and could actually enhance people's lives and sexuality. So it all came together. That was 1984.
Yes, that was I have to say, when I first saw the first Femme, The Femme and Urban Heat, I was really struck by the quality of the video. And I want to say also that, you know, this is a very easy night for me because I have on my screen, I'm at Candida's website right now, candidaroyale.com. And it's a really, really beautiful website, lots of information. So there's so many things that I can look here and create questions from that, you know, we could possibly even go to part three and part four.
And I won't have to write my memoirs.
Well, I think you definitely should do that. I think you,
yes, I will.
I think you should do that. And of course, you know what I want to see, of course.
I'm not sure.
I want to see Revelations 2, The Secret Fantasies of Candida Royale.
Well, you know what? My fantasies aren't all that secret. They're in all the Femme movies.
Yes.
If you really look, that's what you're doing. When you do movies like this, if you really work from your heart and soul, you're basically letting everyone in on what's going on. And I know that a lot of my early work seems quite vanilla and safe, because I was sort of playing it safe back then. This was a very new idea. But if you start, if you really look at some of the later work and, like Eyes of Desire, Eyes of Desire is a two-parter. That was really inspired by one of my most torrid love affairs that I had for 5 years. Where my, sexuality really blossomed and it's all in there. And it's not all there, but that's really what was behind. There was Missy and Mickey G were the stars. They were married. They were an amazing, couple and with that movie, I think that series, Eyes of Desire Part 1 and 2, is some of the best work I ever did, and I think it was very much because it was inspired by my own life, my own feelings.
Well, I keep coming back to, when I say Revelations 2, I'm talking about the second disc on the first Revelations with those two scenes never made it. And the reason, I'll tell you why I love those scenes too so much. Because first of all, they are just so well done.
Thank you.
Everything, the casting, the directing, and the fact also it's shot on film. It's so well done. But also, those two scenes, if someone said to me, give me a reel, give me Candida's best, I would take those two scenes and put those on. And I would say, this puts a nail in the coffin to say that she cannot direct a hot scene. All that nonsense that goes back right to 1984. I found the original Time magazine article with the infamous Jim Holliday quote, sensitivity is wonderful, but it's not arousing. those two scenes, they were so great, and it's just like, wow, and it's, I think that's why I'm just so, excited about them, and I really, really love them.
That scene that where there's sort of a power play and then it's reversed, and that really was inspired by this love affair that I was talking about. So it really, and so much of it also has to do with the casting. I think that it was really good casting, the people that were in it.
I think it was great that you had Rick Savage, because I always felt that he was a little underrated. He never quite got the glory as the Jamie Gillises and the John Leslies got.
That's right.
That also could be probably because he was a New York guy, and he was mainly out here. And he'd also done his own stuff, too. He had his own video series for a while.
Jamie Gillis was also from New York. I just think that Jamie is such a larger-than-life type of person.
Yeah.
He's got a huge ego. And I don't say that in a bad way. You know, he's just got a very large presence, and that's kind of hard to compete with. But
yes.
But I think that Rick was very, very good at what he did and very erotic in that scene in particular.
Yeah, he was. I thought he did a fantastic job on that, and
yeah.
He was just always, I thought, a really good presence.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned to you that those two scenes were shot originally for the movie Revelations.
Yes.
And then I kind of backtracked a little, and I got uncertain about whether they really worked, and I decided to reshoot the erotic scenes, and I didn't use those two scenes, and then I came to regret it because I realized they were so, you know, they should have been in there somehow, and so when I was able to release it on DVD, it's just so great because then you could see those two scenes finally. But now, you know, I have to say, unfortunately, now that people don't rent DVDs as much and they just go download stuff from the computer, from video on demand sites, they're not going to see those scenes again because they don't show the extras on these VOD sites, which is so frustrating. And I've tried to talk to so many people that run the sites and say, look, I've put together really good behind the scenes documentaries for a lot of my movies. They're not fluff pieces like in most of the adult movies. And in this case with Revelations, I have those two lovely shot on film scenes that was so much more inspired, and no one's going to see them because they don't use that additional stuff for video on demand. So I hope people will go out and occasionally still rent the DVDs.
Well, I hope so too. And but of course, my solution is that to create a new film, a new video, with those two as the lead off, and then shoot new material.
Yeah. Well, I know. And you know, I'll tell you something. Shooting on film that time, 35 millimeter film, was such a lesson for me of everything I didn't know. It is so much harder to shoot on film. It really is, and it's the reason, it's part of the reason why we have such a glut of crappy product in adult movies, because people can get away with shooting everything on video. And even though I've always been the first one to say, look, don't blame the video, blame the people making it, because video enabled a lot of people like myself to go and explore and create a genre that didn't exist before. You can't really get a big budget for a genre that's experimental. So I was able, because I could shoot on video, I was able to come up with this whole new genre, this, you know, movies for couples and with a woman's voice. But I really worked hard at making it look beautiful, where so many people thought, oh, yay, video, now I can just pick up a video and, you know, shoot anything and I don't have to worry about lighting or anything. And it's just a shame. But when you shoot on film, oh, my God, that was such a lesson. Like that one scene with Rick in it, that was an 18-hour day just for that one scene. Most people shoot an entire porn film in 18 hours.
Yes.
And it took me 18 hours to shoot that scene. It was exhausting. It was truly exhausting.
Yeah, that's why that was going to be one of my questions, is that that the video age is really kind of like what allowed you to do femme in the first place. It probably most likely could not have happened. I can't say it couldn't have happened. Well, could not have happened back during the golden age. Although there had been, as we had discussed before, there had been women who had directed films. Anne Perry was one who I believe you worked with.
Right. But most of those women were still creating movies that they thought men would like. And it could not have happened even because home video is what created the audience.
Yes.
There really wasn't a women's audience before video was born because women didn't want to go into those theaters.
No.
I mean, there was a brief period in New York that we've all heard about, you know, porno chic, where couples went to the theaters in New York to see Deep Throat and Devil and Miss Jones. But that was a very elite group, you know, in a big cosmopolitan area. That wasn't the norm. No. So there was definitely no women's market back then. Being that movies could suddenly be watched in the privacy of your own home where you're safe and people don't know that you're looking at them, that's what gave women the ability and the feeling that they could watch these movies. So the audience was there. I recognized it. And then being able to spend at that time $20,000 on my first movie as opposed to $100,000 gave, the producer, investors were willing to put that money. It wasn't a lot of money.
Right.
It wasn't a lot of money. I went on, Revelations did actually cost $125,000, but which is, of course, lunch money in Hollywood, but it's a lot for adults.
Oh, yeah. What is it like today?
Well, today it's a very, very bad time for the adult industry. Because of all the free internet content, everyone's losing money, the DVD market is drying up, and so investors, financiers do not want to put up the money for good budgets and good productions. Everyone's scrambling, they don't know how to compete, so it's a big shakedown. It's a big shakedown. Really good quality features are going to suffer because with video on demand, people really just, they want to look at 10-minute, 5-minute pieces. And the return on this is very, very low. So it's bad. You're really going to continue to see a lot of completely cheap, uncreative stuff just flooding the marketplace. And
right.
It's just, people don't realize that it's all well and good to think, oh, isn't this great? I can download stuff for free. I can upload stuff and let people look at me and this and that. But, creative people need to live too. And if there's no way to make money back for what you're doing, then you can't do it anymore.
Right, and as you said, the quality suffers. It seems like it's just turning, the desktop or the laptop into this giant peep show machine, and
right.
Going right back to the old days of loops, practically.
Yeah, and but they still had to buy the loops,
like
at least. They still had to buy the loops. Yeah, it's true. Well, you know what? I think it's going to be, I think, unfortunately, that it's going to send porn right back into the real seedy back rooms, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
even if it's coming through your computer. I really do. And honestly, I think that the porn industry has refused to grow up and put out, even though there are a handful of people who really want to do something creative, who do something exceptional, there's so much crap and the trade magazines that review and write about this stuff, they support all the crap and it's a genre that has insisted on appealing to the lowest common denominator. It's still controlled by dinosaurs and guys that just are in it for the money. And so it's kind of getting its just desserts. I think that a new genre has to be born. I really do.
Yes,
we bundle everyone up under this heading of porn, and I don't want to be labeled porn anymore, seeing what's going on, just as much as you wouldn't put Radley Metzger into the same under the same heading as most of the crap that's coming out.
No.
So.
Well, actually, he's coming back.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
He's making a new. There's a new series of erotic shorts that he's making. He's going to be shooting this October in New York.
You see shorts. He's doing shorts.
They're doing shorts. Going to be series of directors are doing these shorts for this one company that's producing it and directing it. In fact, it was funny.
Wow.
He was at Lincoln Center last month for a showing of The Cat and the Canary, and he did Q&As. And I had a chance to meet him and talk to him, and I said, oh, I just want to thank you for coming back. He says, how do you know about that? I thought I had that under wraps.
Wow.
I know everything.
On the internet, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The casting notice was on the internet.
Yeah. Wow. And is he actually directing them?
Yes.
Wow. So that's going to be some nice stuff.
I think it will be, and I think it's, you know, yeah. I think it's about it's right that he comes back now and and does something. And I have to say is, you know, I hope I look that good when I'm 80.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I haven't seen him, but wow, that's
fantastic.
Great. Yeah.
Must be all that alternate therapy he was doing for all those years.
Yes, exactly. Keeps you young. Well, it's good because, like I said, the porn valley has dominated everything for the last, I don't know, 20 years and 15 years, and it's made a mess of everything. And it's,
yes.
No, I guess more like 25 years. Good Lord. And it's just made a mess of everything. It's really time for people of a different mind to step in and remind us that sexually explicit erotica can be beautiful, can be inspiring, exciting. I mean, even a lot of people within the industry, people who have been reviewers, will say the stuff that comes across my desk that I'm supposed to watch, all of this, it all starts to look the same, and it's numbing.
Yeah.
It's numbing, and it's more of a turn-off than anything.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, I would say probably 20 years ago, it was really so bad with the junk that was coming out. And then, thank goodness, Jamie Gillis got in that limousine, and he took that ride with the camera and created Gonzo.
Mm-hmm.
So not that I'm, you know, totally behind that. But at least it was something different.
It
gave some kind of new shot in the arm, you know. But I think now, I think we need to have a new genre. What we really need is really true erotica, which is what you pioneered. Which I hope that you will continue to do. I know that we all want to see you do another production. I think that's what's really needed is something that, okay, this is porn, this is erotica, and there is a difference. And it's not just a question of semantics.
Right. Yeah, there is. There is a difference. The problem is the word erotica seems to fall flat. You know, people, they hear erotica and they start thinking of the stuff that you see all over cable TV, which I also find incredibly boring. It's just, you know, people who are posing, and they're not really into the eroticism at all. They're just they're posing, and it falls flat. And it's just this very overpretty, perfectly bodied young people pretending to be making love, and that's not exciting either. There's got to be something in between, right in between there. Right in between. And I think people really should be making love. That's the only way you get the genuine heat.
Yes.
But it can't be pornographic.
You don't need those extreme monster shots.
Right.
I mean, that's not what you would see in reality anyway if you go to an orgy or something like that. You don't see those kind of close-ups.
Yeah, you see whole bodies. You see full bodies. You see people's faces. You know, it's like there was some standard shots were created way back when pornography was first made, you know, in the turn of the last century.
Yeah.
So there were certain camera angles that really were made to invoke the feeling for the male viewer that it was him doing it. There were all these shots from over the guy's shoulder of the woman. And very intense insertions but that's all well and good. There's a ton of that stuff, but do something else.
Right.
And certainly that's not what women see.
No.
And, you know, women see the man's face, they see the man's body hovering over them, or, you know, they might see, like, women love to see men's arms and hands. Arms and hands I've always found so sexy. And maybe that's a lot, because it's a lot of what you see when you're making love, you know?
Right.
Especially if the man is behind you, but you see his arms and his hands and they're gripping you. It's just, it's so much a part of it. Or you reach back and you grab his butt. And you know, pull him into you. So men's butts become very symbolic. And I can, so many times on the set, if I have a male cameraman, I'll say to him, now remember, these are the things that women want to see. We want to see the man's back. We want to see his muscles. We want to see his butt muscles clenching and tightening. We want to see his arms and his hands gripping the woman. You know, things like that. We want to see the faces when you're in the throes of orgasm and hands gripping. And, you know, women don't, when it's time for a climax, women don't care about seeing the guy pull out and come all over. I mean, yes, that has a place too, and that can be a turn on, but gosh, not every single time.
No. Yeah, certainly not in one's eye.
No, oh, God. Oh, that's the worst. It stings. Yeah. So
there has to be something different, and I think that there will be, that there's a, you know, there's that wonderful website I shot myself, and just people with the having orgasms, and all you see are their faces.
Right.
And that's like, it's so many hits. I mean, hey, producers, are you listening? This is what people want to see.
Yeah, that's right.
I always thought that seeing the faces, that was far more of a turn on. You know, that was what was so great about what you were doing with that.
Yeah, no cum shots. You know, whole bodies, people in the throes of, you know, they're coming, but you see them, you
right.
don't, you know, yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, it's time for, I really think the porn industry is sinking rapidly, and maybe it's time, you know, it's old, it refuses to grow, it refuses to grow up, and so it's got to evolve into something else, and I think that some of the best talent is going to come from outside the industry. For sure. And until you elevate it to something else, it's not going to draw and attract really creative people that have the skill and the talent and the imagination to create something different, because they'll be afraid of being associated with it.
Right.
There are so many people that want to explore sexuality on film, but they don't want to dare be considered pornographers, because it's a pejorative term, they don't want to ruin their career.
Right, and it's career death. I mean, you know, that's it. I mean, that's all you'll be doing, you know, unless they create something different. Well, all I would say to the industry is, you know what, take a good look at Al Goldstein.
Mm-hmm.
Take a good look at Guccione. Take a look at people who did not change, and look what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's
both
right.
These guys were giants, they were titans, but they did not stay current with the time. And what happened?
Right.
Well, you know, boom, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to stay current. You have to be up on the technology. And you know, it was interesting because for many years the industry got the benefit of technology, but now the technology has turned the tables on them.
Right. That's right. That's right, and they don't know where to go with it. I mean, even Steve Hirsch with Vivid.
Yeah.
Vivid has been, you know, riding the top of the wave, the crest of the wave there for so long, and now he's lost. He doesn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's putting out little quickies and stuff, because technology has really created whole new challenges for the industry that they just don't know what to do with, because it's all being done and given away and gotten for free.
Right. They either have to do basically what the recording industry has done, either found a way to stop it, or they just kind of have to devise a different method. And he was on that show, that CNBC special they did about the business of porn, and I think he said something to the effect of, "We may just have to give it all away, and then be sponsored."
And who's going to sponsor them?
That's a good question. It might have to be like toy companies and things like that. People who do other products that are related to it.
They don't need to. You know what? They don't even need to. And what's happening, and this leads into the other work that I do now, which is the Natural Contours line, because what's happening now is that all the people who were making adult movies and have big companies are jumping over to toys because that's where the money is now.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a tangible item. People can't get it for free. They have to buy it. And it's so popular, and women are so comfortable with it now. It's everyone wants to own their own vibrator, and so that's where people are jumping. But now the same thing is going to happen in that industry, because in 1995, I was approached by an industrial designer from Holland about creating a line that was very much like my film line, which is that it was erotic, but it had taste and good quality. And so we were the first ones to come out with a line of adult toys that didn't look like the typical same old plastic phallus. And they were also ergonomically correct in that those, you know, clearly no one was talking to the women, because women need direct stimulation of their clitoris to come. You know, about maybe 20-25% of women can come just vaginally, but most women need clitoral stimulation.
Yes.
So why are you all making plastic phalluses to vibrate? So we, of course, would then create something that really fit on the woman, and so that not only did it get her where she should get, it also looked good, and even the most conservative woman would be comfortable owning one. So that was our whole thing, and we were the first people to really get our products into the mainstream. We ended up in a lot of women's mainstream health catalogs. Drugstore.com started their whole sexual wellness with Natural Contours. And so we really paved the way. And in the 10 years since we released our first products, 1999, the whole market has exploded. And all the designers have looked at our design elements and taken from them, and then the adult toy manufacturers finally realized that they had to start getting creative if they wanted to maintain their any sort of competition. So they started changing and creating things that were similar, toys that were similar, and now everyone, it's unbelievable how many people are coming out with toy lines and vibrators and all kinds of sex toys. So everyone's jumping in, and it's going to be the same flooding of product. The next thing is going to be that China, where so much of it gets manufactured, is going to start creating their own and coming after the American market without even going through the American companies anymore.
Wow.
So this is what happens in every product line that gets popular, unfortunately.
And you're going to be going to Berlin soon.
I will be going to Berlin to the Erotic International Venus Fair, an erotic fair, and it's huge. Have you ever been to it?
No, but I've heard about it.
It's huge. I've never been there yet, so this is my first year. It's next month, in October. I think the first day is the 14th, 14th or 15th, and actually right on my birthday is the first day. Yeah.
That's a great birthday.
Yeah.
It'll be a great way to celebrate.
I know. That'll be great. We'll be at our Natural Contours booth in the business-to-business section. And I think that goes on for 4 or 5 days. And during that time, Laura Merritt, who has an erotic shop for women there in Berlin, is holding the first feminist porn awards there, and I'm getting an award, and along with a few other women. And then I'm staying after that, and there's an annual porn film fest that takes place in Berlin now, and I'll be presenting some of my work and giving a talk there. So I'll be there for 10 days. I'll be very busy. So,
well, I hope you bring a camera with you.
You know what? You're right. I should bring my camera. I mean, I always bring my still camera, but I should bring my video camera. You're absolutely right.
Yes, you have to. You have to.
Yeah.
Poor people like me who can't travel, we have to see something on YouTube.
Well, you know, it's hard for me because I'm always getting interviewed, so it's hard for me to be the interviewer and to walk around and take pictures. So I never think to bring my video camera because I'm always on camera. But maybe I'll try and do that.
Maybe you should bring Michele with you, give him something to do.
I know. Michele Capozzi. Listen, if I could, I would. That would be great. Just trail me around with a camera. That would be a great
idea. You want me to trail you with the camera? Yeah, I come with you. We're going to shoot the film. The fuck? What's going on with my camera now?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. Oh, God. Michele exposed.
Well, just to let you know, Michele is going to be here next week. He's going to be my guest.
Yes, that's right. He told me. He's a great talent.
Oh, he is.
He's a great untapped talent. He really should be doing more. He's really good.
I've been pushing him now for so long to get Pornology in New York on DVD. I said, yeah, you know, I've seen it so many times, but I want my own copy of it. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's another whole topic. But listen, I've tried to put a light under him too. But anyway, you know, that's the business end is very, very difficult. And that's the hardest part for creative people. And the shame of it is that so often the thing that drives you is your creativity and your ideas, but then to get it out to the marketplace, you have to get serious and get involved and engaged in business. And sometimes the business takes over, and it's it can really burn you out. You know, I did my own international distribution for 10 years, and it really helped put my work on the map. And get a good deal then with Adam and Eve, who now distributes my work and finances my work. But it can really take over and drain you so that you have nothing left for to be creative with anymore.
Right.
So it's very tough. It's very tough. But on that end, I do want to mention, by the way, that I'm really moving into this whole thing of introducing other women directors into the market.
Yes, tell me about that.
Yeah, my first one is going to, well, you know, actually I produced Aphrodite Superstar, which featured the directorial debut of a very talented young black woman who went by the name Venus. But now I'm releasing Petra Joy's movie called Feeling It. And she's a European director. She did a lot of documentaries for television and I'm very excited about that. We're going to release it under the Femme label, and that's coming out in mid-November.
And that's going to be great.
She's a real dynamo. She's gotten a lot of awards and recognition and nominations overseas and in Canada, so we're finally going to get her work over here.
That's wonderful, and I'm glad that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Because you know you have that eye, and you can see that.
Yes. Well, her work is good. Her work reminds me of some of my early femme work. It's and it really is different. It's not traditional porn. I want to do more of that. I want to find other women's work, but I don't want to release just more porno. It's really got to be different.
And yeah, I really want to see that. I really encourage you to do that because like you said, there needs to be something different. I had very high hopes for something that you had been. You were a consultant on the Libido Project, and you had a small part in you played in one of the scenes.
That's right. That's right.
And I had really hoped that that would keep on going because I thought, oh, finally, someone finally has got it right.
Yeah, well, again, that was Jack and Mariana, and they were doing it all themselves, even to the distribution, and I think they just burnt out. It's so hard. You know, you're competing with so many different, so many people, a flooded marketplace, and it's so much work. It's so much work. It takes so much effort, so much money. And that's why it's really the big companies that end up doing the best, because they get on a roll, they start bringing in the money, they can hire the people they need, and as long as they do good business, you know, that they're smart with their business, that's what you need. You end up having to align yourself with a very big company to make it. It's very hard to do it.
It's not the creativity problem, it's usually the whole business thing.
It's the business end. It really is. And, you know, like I said, I was my own little company here in New York for 9-10 years doing my own distribution. But I'm glad, and we did really well. It really put us on the map. But it was so much work. And I got to where I couldn't make another movie. I had to unload the distribution. Which is as it should be anyway. You don't want to be doing all of that. And it was good because I got my line up to a level where it had been so successful and I had a lot of clout and could go and get the deal I wanted. And also I had learned so much hands on about distribution. As much as I hated it, I learned everything and I knew what to expect of a distributor. So no one could screw me over, and no one could not do a good job. Well, they could not do a good job, but I was always there. I was always there with the whip. Do this, do that. I unfortunately learned the hard way. I made some enemies, but I've learned how to be more politically savvy in getting what I need and what I want without alienating the people that I need to do it for me. And that's a tough lesson. Not everyone succeeds in that. Playing politics is really difficult, and it's not fun, but if you want to succeed, you have to learn how to do it. And a lot of creative people don't have that ability. My dad was a jazz drummer, and one of his biggest problems was that he did not have the ability to play politics, and that's with a lot of creative people, so that's a real tough part.
I think you got. I think you have possibly another career doing seminars on that.
Well, I've done seminars. I did for the, I forget that company, the people that do the adult classes all over the city here.
The Learning Annex.
The Learning Annex, yeah. For a couple of years I did a course for the Learning Annex and how to break into movies in front of and behind the camera. Most of the people came for behind the camera. I was surprised. And, I did do that. And
that's where I first met you.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it was. I think it was a good 22 years ago. You were doing a seminar. It was supposed to be at some high school, and then they canceled it because it was you.
Because the superintendent was scandalized. Right. They wouldn't let us do it.
And it was just right after you had done the Morton Downey Jr. show.
Yeah. Oh, God, the Morton Downey Jr. show. Oh, my God, that's right. You know, and that's a funny story. And I know we don't have long, but I'll share this story. I don't know how many of your people will even remember Morton Downey. He was really, he was like such an example of what TV talk show was becoming, you know. And I remember I got a call on the phone to be on the debut Morton Downey, his debut show, and, you know, a national show televised. And I didn't know who he was, but it seemed like it was going to be a great, you know, a lot of exposure. And I was on with Gloria Leonard and Seika.
Yep.
And so I said, sure, I'll do it. And then I started seeing the ads and TV Guide and stuff for it. And the ad featured a screaming mouse. And I realized that he was known for, like, being really hard on his guests and screaming people down and all this stuff. I thought, oh, no, it's a setup. It's a setup. And I was living in this nice Brooklyn family neighborhood, and I thought, oh, my God, I'll be run out of the neighborhood. And I'm getting really worried about it, so I started making all, and my name was already in the ad, so I didn't want to pull out, but I called up, I started making all these demands, like, okay, I get this much time to state my case first, and blah, 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 and this and that. So then it rolls around, the day rolls around, and I'm on, and one by one, they, you know, they bring us out on stage, and both Gloria and Saker are wearing black, and I wear this pink linen out suit. I used to get dressed in very professional outfits back then, and I'm nervous as all get up, and I'm just waiting for this, you know. And so first he interviews Saker, then he interviews Gloria, and one by one he ends up, it turns into a real shouting match, and the two of them storm off the stage one after the other, and they, you know, one of them even gave him the finger on the way out.
Gloria did.
Yeah, you saw this.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I was watching it when it was happening.
Yeah, so you don't even know what I was going through. So I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's my turn. Here I go. And he turns, and I'm the only one left up on the stage, and he turns to me, and his whole demeanor changes. I don't know if you recall this. And he says, now, Candida does something very different. And he starts talking about what nice work I do, and he says, Candida, tell us about what you do. And I felt like Ralph Cramden, like hamana, hamana, hamana. I was so shocked and so disarmed. I could hardly speak. It was like expecting to go to battle and having them meet you with daisies in their hands or something. And I was just stunned. And that was it. We finished out the rest of the show. He's sitting down talking about Three Daughters, what a nice movie it is. And so, and you know, he became one of my biggest fans. He started, I had my husband in the audience, and this guy started coming on to me. He had me on a show later, a couple of years later, and he didn't want to let me off stage. It was a riot. But the other thing was that Gloria and Saker were really pissed at me because they thought that I should have stormed off in solidarity.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, come on, girls, get real. I'm there to sell movies. What do you think? This thing was a boon for me. Even to where my father had watched it, and I didn't know this, that he was, you know, really up on what I was doing and all of this. You know, he was still fairly new at the time. And I remember him saying how proud he was of me and this and that. And like, oh, my God. It just showed the influence that that TV had on people's careers, and how you just, you know, we've become this culture that becoming famous on talk show TV just makes you everything. But that was quite the experience.
Oh, I remember those days, and I remember watching that show when it first came on, and wow, he was just really so, and this nice lady kept on going. You had totally won him over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would like to point out that it was my movie that won him over. He had seen Three Daughters, and he was being sincere. I mean, you know, I don't want to sing my praises to my own praises too much, but the point is, like what I've always said, when I started sending out my press kits and my movies, it's one thing to tell people what I do, but it's another thing to look at it and be able to say, to have people in the media look at it and have them say, gee, she's right, this really is different. If my stuff was just like all the other porno, I never would have gotten all the press coverage I've gotten over these years.
Right.
And it's really the media coverage that I've gotten that has made my line a success, or that has let people find out about it, because I didn't have the money for big media marketing budgets at all. But I had me as a communicator, and the fact that when people looked at it, they could see I was sincere and not just mouthing off.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you had so many awards from sex therapists and sexual educators.
Yeah, yeah. It's been very rewarding.
It is, because you set out to do something and you did it, and
yeah.
you proved all those naysayers wrong, and at the same time you did something that not only people can really enjoy, but something that really helps them.
Yes, I'd like to think so. I would like to think so, and
no, I don't think you have to think so. I think you know so, and we all, and it's just wonderful work. And I just hope to see some more come out.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I thank you for being so supportive and kind, and for having me on not once but twice. And
well,
looks like we could do round three.
Absolutely. You know, we could talk about how to tell a man what to do in bed the next time.
Exactly. My book, How to Tell a Naked Man What to Do. We didn't even get to that.
Right.
And maybe you can have me and Petra on when she comes to the States.
Absolutely. I would love to have her. I'd love to have her, you, and Jamie Waxman.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. Absolutely. All right. Okay.
Well, I want to thank Candida Royale for being here on the show with us. And please, everyone, go to CandidaRoyale.com. And there you can see all about her book and her films. And is there a separate site for Natural Contours?
Yes, naturalcontours.com. Very easy. And you can also access Natural Contours through my website as well. And remember, that's Royale with two L's and an E.
Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you,
Stephen. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. And I want to thank everyone for listening to the show tonight. And we will be back next week with the erotic maestro himself, Michele Capozzi. And that's going to be, I think, a really, really fun show. Thank you for listening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and good evening.